Okay, ladies and gentlemen, board members, please. All right, Mr. Harris, would you please introduce our next item?
Now that I have my glasses. 1 year ago, this is item 21, status of Cambria Community Service District Emergency Water Supply Project. 1 year ago, the board adopted permits for Cambria's emergency water treatment system. At that time, the board asked staff to bring an update back to the board in a year's time. Water Resource Control Engineer John Rocky has a presentation prepared to discuss the project, and the Community Service District staff is also here and will provide additional information after John. John.
Good morning, Chairman Wolf, members of the board. My name is John Rocky. I'm a water resources control engineer assigned to the WDR unit here at the Central Coast Water Board. Today I'll be presenting the 1 year update you requested when you adopted WDRs for the Cambria Emergency Water Supply Project, which is now becoming known more and more as the Advanced Water Treatment System. My presentation today will bring you up to date as to what has been going on with this project, and along the way provide some photos of the project for those of you who've not been able to go out there and take a look at it. A lot's happened in the years since you adopted the WDRs, and this project and this presentation is necessarily going to hop around a little bit to touch on many differing aspects of this complex project. With me today are Ryan Lodge of the Title 27 unit and Katie D. Simone of the NPDS unit. They'll be assisting me in answering your questions regarding the permits they oversee for this project. At the conclusion of my presentation, Jerry Gruber, the general manager of Cambria Community Services District, is here, and he'll be available to take your questions and give you a little perspective about how it looks like it's been going from his angle. To begin, I just want to start with this slide that shows Cambria's approximate location along the California Central Coast, just to sort of get our bearings. And this aerial view shows the project's location relative to the town down at the bottom down there and the town's wastewater treatment plant. The project is approximately 3 miles north-northwest of the municipal treatment plant. And the Hearst San Simeon State Park is located just to the west of the advanced treatment plant. And the proximity of the park to the brine impoundment has been the source of some friction over the past year. Now I want to go over just a little bit of the history of the project. On January 14th, 2014, CCSD Board declared a Stage 3 water shortage emergency. Governor Brown issued drought emergency declarations in January and April of 2014, enabling a streamlined permitting process for projects such as this. As you know, the Water Board undertook a huge effort to adopt the Title 22, 27, and Title 27 permits. And in November, you actually adopted those WDRs in what was really record time for a project of this kind. The plant started up January 20th of 2015 and ran 8 hours a day for 59 days until being shut down on April 17th of this year. Recently, on September 22nd, the plant restarted and is currently operating at 10 hours a day. As a reminder, this facility is designed to treat impaired groundwater to Title 22 standards and then re-inject the treated water into the aquifer to augment the district's San Simeon well field. It was designed to produce 700,000 gallons a day of reverse osmosis treated water and about 65,000 gallons a day of brine. The view in this photo is looking roughly north at the facility. You can see it's a relatively compact, modular, high-tech operation. Now, just to touch a little bit about the technology that's going on out there. This is an in view of one of the three containers that contains reverse osmosis treatment systems. This next photo is a photo of the membrane filter system, which is at the beginning of the process. It's kind of the roughing filter. Here's another view of the RO units, this time looking from the inside of the container out. And finally, this is what the UV disinfection system looks like at the end of the treatment train. I'm going to go to talk about the groundwater quality out in at the site. This slide shows some of the groundwater quality averages before and during the facility's initial operations period. The pre-column shows averages concentrations prior to the startup of the advanced treatment system, and the startup column contains the averages of the data that was collected during the startup period from January through April. This first table contains data from well SS3, which is one of the district's municipal supply wells. Next, we have the data from well 9P7, and that's the well that supplies water to the project, the project's influent, basically. And lastly, we have data from well 16D1, which is a monitoring well located down near San Simeon Lagoon. In general, the groundwater quality data shows negligible effects from the treatment plant's operations. Now I want to talk a little bit about the NPDES lagoon discharge. One of the concerns about capturing and treating water from the aquifer stems from the potential to reduce the amount of water that's replenishing San Simeon Creek and Lagoon. To address that possibility, the district instituted a lagoon mitigation and monitoring program and directs up to 100 gallons per minute of membrane filtrate water, that's water that's gone through that first process, to the lagoon via overland flow from a location down near the lagoon. It's near well 16D1. This discharge is permitted via the NPDES low threat general order. This photo was taken last week when I was out there, and the lagoon appeared to be healthy and algae-free on the surface. Now, making one of those hops I was telling you about, I'm going to hop over to the brine pond. A byproduct of the reverse osmosis process is a relatively high TDS brine stream, which is directed to a lined impoundment adjacent to Hearst San Simeon State Park campground. Initially, it was thought that the evaporation from the pond would need to be enhanced, and blowers were installed, or enhanced evaporation units were installed to provide that treatment or that evaporation. You can see one of the five blowers, the left-hand one, operating in this photo. The neighbors complained about the noise and the drift of the brine from the mechanical evaporators soon after the facility began operation. The Title 27 permit requires that all aerosolized brine remain within the confines of the pond. This turned out to be difficult to achieve given the variability of the wind conditions at the site. This next photo was taken last week. As you can see, natural evaporation is doing its job without the need to use those mechanical evaporators. Here's another angle of the pond taken last week, and you can see there's a fair section of the bottom of the pond is still exposed, and that's after more than a month of 10-hour-a-day operation. The Community Services District has been in discussions with San Simeon Community Services District regarding alternative brine disposal options with the Water Board staff in full support of that endeavor. Next hop is to notice a violation that was issued on February 27th of this year. The Assistant Executive Officer issued the NOV, as it's known, to the district for violation of all three of their active permits. The NOV came after it was discovered that a pipe originally meant to discharge to the San Simeon Creek had been realigned such that it was discharging to nearby Van Gordon Creek. Testing of that discharge revealed that it contained chlorine in excess of the 0.02 milligram per liter maximum allowed under the NPDES low threat order. The notice of violations cited the following permit violations. For Title 27, the violations were discharge outside the approved area. That has to do with the drifting of the mist. Failure to measure and record the amount of freeboard. Failure to weekly inspect and record leachate volumes. Again, Title 27 is the permit Ryan Lodge administers. The Title 22 permit, that's the one I oversee, the violations were for failure to discharge at an approved location and according to the OMMP, or the Operation Maintenance and Monitoring Plan. Violations of the NPDS order were for failing to monitor and report as required, for discharging in a manner not described in the notice of intent, for causing scour and erosion at the point of discharge, and for violation of the chlorine effluent limit. The NPDS order is Katie DeSimone's domain. A total of 13 violations of the three permits were cited in the NOV. The district responded satisfactorily to the NOV on March 26th, and a dechlorination system was installed to preclude any more discharges of chlorinated water to the creek, whether it be whichever creek the pipe was aimed at. The evaporator blowers are not being utilized, and the pond has sufficient capacity. The photo you're looking at, it was the recently reinstalled dechlorination system that will allow the addition of fully treated RO water to the creek mitigation water if it's needed. That's really a contingency. This is a photo of that discharge that was aimed at Van Gordon Creek. And this is a photo of that water actually flowing into the creek. Okay, now another hop. We're going to go to the wastewater treatment plant. When the advanced treatment plant was shut down in early April, it was because testing revealed that elevated nitrate concentrations were in the treated effluent. Subsequent investigation revealed that the high nitrogen levels were being driven by high nitrogen levels in the town's wastewater treatment plant effluent being discharged to the perk ponds. The district's wastewater treatment effluent quality directly impacts the quality of the advanced water treatment system's effluent and therefore the performance of the new system. The district is pursuing funding for denitrification upgrades as part of the drought emergency, since the nitrate levels in the effluent directly impact the advanced water treatment system's abilities. The main treatment process units are all in need of refurbishing at the wastewater plant, and those primarily are the sludge holding tanks, the aeration basins, and the clarifiers up toward the top. The district completed a 10% design per an enforcement order in June of this year, which included configuration changes that would allow the district to denitrify the plant's effluent. The district is actively pursuing funding to accomplish this reconfiguration. The money needed really there were a number of proposals in the 10% design, but they're chasing the money under the drought umbrella to really go after denitrification. Only certain changes in that 10% design involve denitrification, and that's what they're going after. In the interim, the chief plant operator was able to rig up a temporary denitrification setup involving turning off the air in the front of one of the aeration basins and adding a recirculation pump to recycle the water back through the system several times. This effort's been largely successful in lowering the nitrogen concentrations and allowed the emergency water supply system to restart. This is a photo of one of the aeration basins. You can see the air is on in the right-hand section, all the bubbles coming up, and turned off in the top section. And in the lower left-hand corner, you get a glimpse of the pipes, a temporary setup I referred to that's recycling the water back to the front of the system again. This is a photo of one of the sludge holding dewatering tanks. You can see a large amount of vegetation growing in the right-hand section, which can assure you it's not a normal thing you'd expect to see in the sludge tank. This is another view. That first one, I apologize, I was looking into the sun trying to get that vegetation. This is with my back to the sun. You can still see the vegetation, but it's not quite as pronounced. And this is a picture of the perk pond, one of the perk ponds over near the advanced treatment plant. If you look closely, you'll see, I can point out right there, there's a duck enjoying the bubbling effluent there. One of the consequences of the temporary nitrogen removal setup was that the dissolved oxygen levels in the wastewater treatment plant effluent were reduced. The district anticipated this reduction and conferred with Water Board staff beforehand. The minimum DO, or dissolved oxygen level, in the permit is 2 milligrams per liter, which really is intended to eliminate odors at the perk ponds. Current DO levels are more around the 1 milligram per liter level, but there's no odors out there. So, another hop. Now I want to talk about the TMDL briefly. Water Board staff posted a draft total maximum daily load, or TMDL, report for public review on March 10th of this year. The TMDL project will address water body impairments due to nitrate, low dissolved oxygen, sodium, and chloride in the San Simeon Creek. We've postponed the completion of the TMDL project and plan to resume when nitrogen reduction upgrades activities are completed at the wastewater treatment plant. The conditions in the Laguna Creek are naturally dynamic. This first photo shows, it was taken in March of this year, and you can see there's some algae blooms in the water. The algae actually got thicker than that as the summer progressed. This next photo was taken last week, and the algae is mostly gone. Water looks very clear, and I hope you can see there's a white crane and actually a great blue heron out there fishing in that photo. This is a photo of one of the control and monitoring panels in the advanced treatment plant. A few months ago, the district requested the Water Board staff take a look at the monitoring reporting program to see if there was anywhere that costs could be reduced. Staff analyzed the accumulated data and determined that it was possible to virtually eliminate 2 monitoring points in the treatment process. To give you a feel for the reporting requirements, monthly reports were averaging 39 pages in length, and the most recent quarterly report I received was 93 pages long. So this is a process flow diagram that kind of shows the different processes at the wastewater plant and the emergency treatment plant. When we looked at the data to see where we could cut back, we realized that 3 of the monitoring points were producing virtually identical data. So after conferring with the Division of Drinking Water folks and amongst everybody on the staff here, it was determined that we could virtually eliminate 2 of those monitoring points. Those 2 points have some automated data collection systems that are continuing to give us data, but the collection of composite and grab samples has been discontinued for that, hopefully resulting in a fair amount of savings for the district. And this arrow I just put in there, I hope, indicates that we've come to view these not as 2 different systems, but really 1 big system. As I said before, the effluent quality coming from the wastewater treatment plant directly affects the influent and therefore the effluent quality of the advanced treatment system. Finally, this is a photo of the lagoon at the end of the beach. When flows are high and the sandbar washes out, the creek flows into the ocean. Otherwise, it's trapped there. To conclude, Cambria Community Services District has been very cooperative in addressing our concerns. has taken proactive steps to help the project succeed. They're going forward and moving this project from an emergency category to a more normal WDR permitting situation with us. And we support those efforts. With that, I'll entertain any questions you might have.
Mr. Young?
Not at this point.
Mayor Delgado?
Thank you. Great report. A lot of work goes into this. Thank you. I really appreciate that. On page 4 and 5, at the end of page 4, start of page 5 of your staff report, you discuss the sort of poor communication, missing each other via emails on the startup of discharge to San Simeon Creek. And I wanted to ask you, is that reflective of the whole operation, or is that just a little glitch of communication that's not reflective of how the operation is being dealt with?
I'd say that was a condition of being in a startup mode for a brand new system like that. There was the builders of the system were there and testing various systems, and it was everything was new for everybody, and there was a lot of sort of semi-pandemonium going on at first because there's a lot to keep track of there. So it was a function of that. As we progress, communication has gotten much, much better. And I converse regularly with district staff and the operators up there about what's going on.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, just a couple of questions. So we're putting the TMDL on hold for San Simeon Creek until they complete the denitrification modifications. And I understand that's contingent on funding. Do we have any sense of timeline, or is it really kind of a black box from where we are because we don't know how they're going to do on funding?
We don't have a good timeline for it. My sense is we're talking about years probably. Staff is doing everything we can do to support obtaining money to make the changes at the wastewater plant that are necessary. But as of the moment, we don't have a real good timeline on it.
I was just going to say, is that what funding source are they trying to access? Is it Prop 1?
We're trying every avenue we can.
So some of the timelines are out of our control. So, for example, State Board hasn't, on a number of the funds, they haven't even released draft guidelines. And my understanding is the first set of requests for proposals won't be until next summer. So some of that is just the normal process we go through in distributing funds.
And, you know, for fairness, this is more of a question probably for the district to answer. So would you please comment and help us understand where you stand?
Thank you, Chairman Wolf and board members. So it's a multifaceted, multi-approach to this. The wastewater treatment plant has needed significant improvements for quite a long time. We've consistently done that under my tenure. We continue to make every effort to replace pumps and motors and blowers and things like that. We've applied for Prop 1 money. We've applied for $6.7 million. The preliminary application process we've applied for those remaining upgrades that Mr. Rocky referred to under the ECA that was issued. That required a 10% design, and we met that criteria and met those standards. So the preliminary cost estimates came in at $6.7 million. We're working with Senator Dean Flores right now in an effort to secure those fundings. We're also in the process of, with the 218 rate increase right now for our water and wastewater rates. The wastewater rates are anticipated to go up 25%. A component within those 25% increases, and we're in that 45-day process right now for the 218, is $250,000 annually dedicated specifically for improvements to the wastewater treatment plant. So there's a real commitment on our board also to understand that We need to move forward in upgrading the facility. The third component would be we're retiring a $174,000 grant on the wastewater side at the end of this fiscal year, end of this calendar year, excuse me. So there's a 1-2-3 punch right now. A fourth component of that is there are additional funds left as part of the Prop 84 money. We don't know exactly how much, but we were at a group meeting yesterday with the RAC folks, what we'll be doing is asking for an additional $2 million as part of that Prop 84. And so we don't necessarily want to take a lackadaisical approach about upgrading our wastewater treatment plant. We realize how important it is. I want to get it done as soon as possible. I want to work with Regional Water Quality Control Board and continue to work with them. They've been fantastic. The only concern that I would have is relating to the TMDL is that we're going to move forward with our designs. We want to make sure we're in continuous dialogue with them so we design a plant that can anticipate meeting the criteria within that TMDL limits. Really quickly on the nitrates going out of the back of the plant, for a long time we were putting NO3s, nitrates, out of the back of the plant at about 30 plus milligrams per liter or parts per million. Historically did that for many years. It was the district's understanding that we could not lower that 2.0 dissolved oxygen level, but in corresponding with districts, with the Regional Water Quality Control Board staff, they allowed us to lower it to 1 milligram per liter. That significantly dropped the nitrate levels. As of the 15th or 16th of November, our last nitrate levels were 2.3, and they're consistently running below 5 milligrams per liter. And we feel that the temporary things that we have in place will continue to allow us to meet those low nitrate levels going out of the back of the plant. I couldn't agree with Mr. Rocky more in incorporating this into one big sustainable water project. And I think that's consistent with what the governor wants for communities within California. I hope that was helpful.
And for the record, if you can identify yourself.
I'm sorry, I'm Jerry Gruber. I'm the general manager for the Cambria Community Services District.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So just, Mr. Rocky, to understand, the nexus between the TMDL, which is for nutrients and dissolved oxygen, is that correct? And the sewage treatment plant, is that the sewage treatment plant is a primary driver of the levels of those in the creek?
That's correct.
And although it looked on the map to me like the sewage treatment plant was south of town, the creek is north of town, but it and I'm assuming that it is through groundwater that reaches the creek, is that right?
Well, no, the treatment plant pumps its effluent up north of town and discharges into perk ponds that are surrounding the
Oh, okay, that's right. I remember that now. Okay, and the other question I had is in reference to the fact that this was moving towards a permitting process that would allow it to be run on an ongoing basis as opposed to an emergency basis. I know when we first approved this, there was some significant public input requesting an environmental impact report, saying that it's being kind of snuck through as an emergency project and will be used as a long-term project. Am I correct in understanding that in order to run this on an ongoing long-term basis as opposed to emergency basis, that the district will have to go through all of the same hoops as far as environmental impact report and coastal commission as they would have had they initially sought to do it that way?
That's correct.
That is correct. We are been working on our EIR, environmental impact report, for the last several months with Michael Baker and Associates. We're working hand in hand with the Regional Water Quality Control Board and also the county. We anticipate the draft of that document being circulated for public and regulatory review by the end of January. We've already submitted our application to the county for our regular coastal development permit, and in part of their due diligence, they indicated that a full environmental impact report consistent with CEQA would have to be done, and we're doing that right now. And so once we get the CEQA document completed, we'll complete the environmental portion of the packet that the county has required, and then that regular coastal development permit will go to the Planning Commission. From there, it'll go to the Board of Supervisors, and from there, it'll go to Coastal Commission.
So that means that unless and until the district receives all of the approvals that they would have had to receive had they done this on a non-emergency basis, they can only operate this on an interim emergency basis. Is that correct?
Well, the permit you adopted doesn't necessarily have any criteria for what's an emergency situation and what is not. It allows them to run the plan and discharge as long as they're meeting the limits of the permit.
And as long as I believe they've declared a level three, there was a level emergency the district had to declare, although I'm not sure there were criteria
those restrictions deal more with their relationship with the county.
That's correct. We're operating the facility right now under an emergency coastal development permit granted by the County of San Luis Obispo. As part of the criteria for that, we need to be in stage three. We're still in stage three. However, if at a later point in time, depending on El Nino and things like that, the CCSD Board of Directors determines that it's not applicable anymore to be under stage three, then they'll lift that. At that point in time, we will no longer be able to operate the emergency water supply project. But if they reinitiated stage three, as we work on our regular coastal development permit and our EIR, then we'd be able to restart it up.
And is the criteria for stage three some sort of universal criteria or whatever the Board of Directors defines it as?
It's really based on the availability of our water supply, which was at a critically low level at when we put this online. So it would be a combination of keeping a close eye on our well supplies in the San Simeon and Santa Rosa Creeks.
Thank you.
So in regard to the denitrification and following up a little bit on Mr. Johnston question, do we have any regulatory obligations associated with timelines associated with the TMDL requirements? Because it's
no, not. I mean, the TMDL scheduling TMDLs is really a discretionary decision by regional board staff, unless the board intervenes. And when you think about it, it doesn't make sense to use regional board staff to develop a TMDL that may very well be solved by the application of technology. A similar situation occurred in Los Angeles, where there was a nitrate problem. I don't recall if it was on the LA River or whatever, and it's allowed under the TMDL policy. You can do what's called a single permit action, and in this case, if they put in denitrification, it solves the problem. We just deal with it through the permit and the conditions in the permit, and we don't have to do the TMDL, so those staff can work on something else. So at this point, it's a wait and see. And as long as they continue to make progress and things progress, and actually the numbers he's quoting are pretty good numbers from a nitrification, a nitrate standpoint. Those are pretty good numbers. So no, I don't think there's any urgency at this point to develop that TMDL as long as they continue to make progress and seeking funding and hopefully redoing their plant.
All right, thank you. Then my next question is, you had a slide earlier showing the, sludge pond, which to me looked like you were developing a hydroponic pond rather than a sludge pond. That doesn't seem to be best management practice, at least from a casual eye.
That's been resolved since then. The hydroponic garden has been removed from the digesters, and those are some of the operational things that we continue to address. My background is in water and wastewater operations and management, and so those simple things like getting in there and cleaning those things out, and actually We processed all the remaining sludge in those digesters and introduced and repaired, made repairs to those digesters so they're working and functioning as they should as aerobic digesters. And but there's some repairs, major repairs that need to be done to those digesters on the catwalks and the air supply system and things like that. And we're optimistic that part of that $6.7 million and then the $250,000 annually, in addition to that bond being retired, will continue to allow us to make improvements to that facility, because we're really, my board and the community and myself and staff are really committed to bringing that up to the highest possible standards.
Yeah, although the hydroponic garden was more of a maintenance issue than a repair issue.
Correct.
One thing, I don't think it was, I don't know if Mr. Rocky mentioned it, but one thing Cambria did is they hired a new operator for the plant, and I've heard nothing but good things from Mr. Rocky about how this gentleman has been operating the facility. Do you want to comment on that, John?
Yeah, he's Orlando is his name, Archuleta. He is really a very skilled operator. He got right on the nitrogen removal issue straight away and quickly figured out what he could do with his existing facilities and to try to affect that, and was had remarkable success. So the pictures I took out there, to be fair, were taken earlier this year when I did my first inspection out there.
Because you mentioned being there 2 weeks ago, so
that's why I thought. Not at the wastewater plant. Okay. I was at the emergency
site. All right,
site.
Thank you for the clarification.
I was gonna ask my staff. I was out there just the other day, and I was like, wow, that grew really quick. I was going to ask them if that was the case, but I didn't think that was. So.
Yeah, you need a lawnmower.
Yeah.
Back to actually a little bit a question that I had with a previous item. How do you get the report? Are those PDF files or?
Unfortunately, they are PDF files. And as I said, they're quite lengthy. And for us to pull the data out of there, you have to basically do it by hand, retype it in to make it useful. So getting it in more usable format would be a big help to the staff.
One of the things, if I could, Chairman Wolf, is that we realize, too, because the reports are so, as Mr. Rocky indicated, 93 pages, we realize that on an ongoing and continuous basis that we need to do a better job in getting the Regional Water Quality Control Board those reports. And as I formulate my budget for next year, I'm going to be creating and recommending to my board a position called an environmental compliance officer. And Cambria is very unique, not just with this facility, but the complexity of all our permits. And it really requires a full-time person to make sure that you're getting your reports and all the other regulatory agencies are getting their reports in a timely manner. And to make sure that we have a liaison that can work directly with the regulatory agencies. Because what we're finding with the many hats that I wear and our district engineer wears and our chief operator, that there's room for improvements in that area, and I've recognized that, and I'll be making some recommendations to my board on how we can better facilitate getting those reports.
Thank you. And when we had the hearing on approving the system, there was some extensive data about about the wells depth, et cetera. And a lot of that was, you know, some of it was made with assumptions because the plant was not yet running. So, you know, there is a relevancy of my question to why we're here today and getting updates. Is there any information now that we have a plant running for quite some time on the different well data that have been impacted by having this recycled water program?
Well, when the plant is running, they take weekly samples of all three of their supply wells up there, a couple of the monitoring wells surrounding the brine pond. They actually installed a new monitoring well for us at our request down near the creek down there.
Yeah.
as well as the 9P7 well, or, which is now captured by the membrane filtrate analysis. So we get good data sets coming out of there. One of the wells that was most problematic, I think, was that well 16D1 that they have replaced for us, just because it was so old. There was no good historical record of how that well was constructed or how, you know, any of the details about how it was screened or anything. So
I'm curious what your question, wells impacted, what do you mean by that?
Well, the whole purpose to have this Cambria recycled water project was because Cambria was running out of water, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there were quite a bit of information presented to us to justify, you know, what the benefits of having this plan is going to do in stabilizing the, the, you know, the groundwater basin. And so my question is, okay, now that the plant is running, I mean, do we have any data showing how you have been able to stabilize your drinking water source? Because that, I mean,
sure.
That's why
we're... So it's the supply volume, not the quality you're asking about?
May I?
Supply predominantly, yes. Yep. Thank you for...
Chairman Wolf, that's a very good question. So there's the empirical and quantitative side of the test results, and I think what you're talking about is more of a, from a sustainability standpoint. So we establish our criteria of when we should turn this facility on. And what we saw happen in the fourth year of a drought is we have a hydraulic mound out there. That hydraulic mound serves two purposes. It keeps the wastewater from migrating towards our well field, it keeps seawater out, but it also keeps our fresh water from going out towards the ocean. That hydraulic gradient reached a zero, which is not a good thing for it to happen. And we noticed that our San Simeon wells were dropping rather rapidly, and we have that data. We take well levels every week. We activated the EWS, and we started injecting water into the San Simeon area. We noticed that the gradient went from negative to positive, and we noticed that we started receiving higher levels in our San Simeon well fields. So we were actually seeing recharge, if you will. The reason this is important is because if we would have continued down that path, we would have continued to get much below a negative gradient. We would have seen our San Simeon wells continue to drop. What complicates this even more is our Santa Rosa wells cannot run unless a WBE well is at 3 feet or more. Right. We're providing 60% of the water for Cambria right now with this project. So it's all linked together. The EWS, the wastewater treatment plant, our San Simeon well fields, our Santa Rosa. We saw the need to kick it on based on that negative gradient. San Simeon wells were dropping. We were getting close to not being able to run our Santa Rosa wells because of permit requirements on our WBE well. We activated the plant. We saw the gradient come back to positive levels. We're seeing the San Simeon wells recharge. It's doing exactly what we stood before you a year ago and said that we needed it to do, not what we wanted it to do. And it's also allowing us to manage our basins and manage both of our groundwater basins in a much more responsible manner. As I indicated in my board meeting yesterday, we were always running on the edge. We were getting our wells really low and hoping and praying for rain. We got rain, and that's not the way to run any public water system. It's not the way to run any watershed, any tributary, any aquifer. We no longer have to do that. So I hope that answered your question a little bit more.
So basic, and that's what I was looking for, because I recall there was a question about how many feet, you know, where you could no longer pump. So you're saying that now 60% of the water, of the potable drinking water supplied, comes from the system.
Currently, that's correct. And what we're seeing and what we're going to see is that WBE well, Windsor Bridge East, it will drop below 3 feet if the drought continues, mm-hmm. which we will not be able we will not be able to use our Santa Rosa wells at all. And that permit was written for a reason. It was written for environmental concerns, and rightfully so. So that's off the table. So now we have a project that's replenishing the aquifers, enhancing the creek and the benefits of the environment there, and also allowing us to meet the community's potable water supply needs. More importantly, too, as I was coming in today, I heard on the radio about the condition of our forest. You know, we have to have a reliable water supply up there for fire protection. And we spend a lot of emphasis on talking about a potable water supply, and rightfully so. But a second part of the why we need this system and why we need a good infrastructure and a good potable water supply is for fire prevention. You know, we have a 40% mortality rate of our Monterey Pines right now. It's probably the worst area in any area in the San Luis Obispo County. So we know that if something ever does happen, we're not going to have to be absolutely dependent upon our wells, that we can be dependent upon this system also.
And you still have a moratorium on new water hookups?
That is correct.
Okay. So my last question is in our report, I'll quote what it says, Water Board staff encourage the district to begin working on a potential brine disposal alternative with San Simeon Community Service District as soon as possible. So where do you stand on that?
We're in continuous dialogue with San Simeon. The complexity of that ocean outfall, because it is part of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, would complicate a quick solution to it. However, we have been talking to San Simeon. We also have been talking to South County as a disposal for the brine, and everything looks good from that standpoint. And so we continue those dialogues, and we continue to evaluate based on concerns from the Regional Water Quality Control Board on that brine disposal.
So from if we put aside, maybe relationship type issues associated with San Simeon Community District, from a technical standpoint, is this doable and feasible based on what you know now in the amount of brine production that you have in the pond?
It's technically doable. It's relationship doable, because we have a great working relationship with them, and we've talked about it several times. Again, I think the biggest hurdle relating, it's infrastructural. Putting a pipe up there is not that difficult. It's really the environmental, and we'll be meeting with Coastal Commission staff and talking to them about that. To me, it seems like the most practical solution, and so it would just be those environmental and regulatory and permitting challenges that we would face. We would not want this to drag on for years and years and years to try to find an alternative to what we're using now.
Okay, thank you. And yes, Mr. Young. Oh, I was going to say, I'll let my colleagues, if you had another question, and then I have speaker cards. And then after the speaker cards, we can round up any additional thoughts and questions that we may have.
So could you go over with me a little bit further? I know we talked about the noise and brine drift issue. And John, could you return to that slide so
sure.
I can kind of connect my thoughts to something visual? So I remember this was a point of concern for the public, some members of the public, when we heard this issue. So how many inches of rain will this hold?
I think a lot. I think that when we designed this, the Regional Water Quality Control Board staff was pretty adamant about making sure that we not only did the 100-year thing, but we did the 1,000-year thing. So I think that's not a concern of El Nino and it overflowing.
Okay, so El Nino, a record El Nino for this year should not cause an overflow of this pond system?
No, it should not. Ryan Lodge,
okay.
And the land disposal unit. Yeah, it's designed to hold a full year of normal rainfall plus a 1,000-year storm event, and in addition to the brine, and they have to maintain 2 feet of freeboard with all that
with
in
all
consideration.
That. Okay. And so how exactly are you dealing with the noise and brine drift problem?
You know, early on, as Mr. Rocky indicated, I forgot the word he exactly used. Was it pandemonium? But the first year we're starting this
right.
up, there was like anything else that you do, there was challenges associated with it. So Regional Water Quality Control Board brought several things to our attention, and we addressed them immediately. The first was that we felt that the weather station was not engaging quick enough to shut the blowers off because it wasn't relocated in the proper area. So we relocated the weather station so it would respond more sensitively to the winds. The other issue was with the orifices on the blowers themselves. We got with CDM Smith and we changed the orifices out on the blowers so they would not they created a different kind of mist that would not drift as much. We took the blowers and we pointed them more downward, as you can see right there, where before they were up more in an upward position. We also, and so those were the things that we did immediately. After that, we continued to run the blowers, and there were still some concerns, frankly, that they weren't doing exactly what they were supposed to be doing. So at that point in time, the fourth thing we did to address the noise component of what you asked us to do is that we were only running them at a certain time, and it was not during, I believe we started running them at night, not during the day. But we found out also that we were able to meet all the requirements of the Title 27 permit without running those blowers. And so that's essentially what we're doing this operational season, is we're not running them. We haven't received any noise complaints. We haven't received any drift complaints because we're not running the blowers. And so that's really how we resolved the matter. Now, as long as we're achieving that evaporation rate and we're meeting the criteria and the monitoring requirements and the results that are outlined within the permit that the Regional Water Quality Control Board provided us, I don't see a problem with it. Now, as part of the EIR, the aesthetics of that, there's a campsite right behind that. We've met with state parks several times, and we're on that higher ridge behind there. We'll be planting trees to address the aesthetic concerns. So there were some complaints. It was mostly from one or two people, but those one or two people are important. I think they had some legitimate concerns. And as a point of clarification, there was some loud noises coming from the EWS, but it was related to a compressor, and we resolved that. And so pretty much everything related to the brine pond as far as drift and as far as noise, the district feels that we've addressed those concerns.
So with the drift, you've tightened up your mechanism to shut down the pumps when airspeed goes beyond a certain...
Three components. We made sure that there was the weather station was relocated.
Okay.
So into an area that would pick up the wind quicker. We narrowed the time in which that weather station, which is that building over there, you'll see it's a pretty sophisticated, we gathered that information and shut it down. We changed the orifices on the blowers to smaller orifices. These are just snow blowers, to be honest with you, like you'd see on a ski slope.
Right.
We changed the orifices to make a smaller mist, and we pointed them downward so they would not be pointing upward as much, thus eliminating some of the drift. And then we reduced the operating hours significantly.
Does the permit require any kind of evaporation rate to be maintained out of the ponds? I mean, could you just not run the system for 2 or 3 weeks if you had to?
Well, that's what we're finding now. And as Mr. Rocky indicated, you can see that the pond is not even close to being full. So I would defer back to, I don't have the permit in front of me, but I would defer back to
The limiting factor for the impoundment is the freeboard requirement. They have to maintain 2 feet of freeboard plus the amount for a 1,000-year storm event. So if they start to encroach upon that, then they'll have to reevaluate whether they're going to continue to discharge brine into the impoundment.
Okay. And In the staff report on page 5, it says, Water Board staff noted brine drift on 2 occasions during site inspections. How many site inspections did staff conduct?
During operation, I conducted 2.
2.
And after the second inspection, they shut down the blowers and started doing making their adjustments in terms of how they're going to evaluate the drift.
Were there 2 different inspections, 2 different days?
Correct.
And on both of those, you noticed brine drift?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I wonder if was indicative of it going on every day.
Potentially, yes. And so after the second inspection, we engaged in had some meetings with the district and we're trying to figure out get them to figure out how to evaluate drift differently than they're doing it or were doing it at that time. And so from that point on, they've stopped operating the blowers. So the drift issue has kind of gone away, so to speak. Now, if they restart those blowers, before they restart those blowers, we want to know how they're going to evaluate drift.
And so now we know what they've done to respond to the problem with the drift. Now, has staff gone back and done any inspections to see whether what they have done has solved the problem?
No, because they have not been operating the blowers. They ran through some tests when they changed out, I believe, the nozzles. They stopped running the fans and just, I believe, were operating the misters. But that time I asked, how are they going to evaluate whether drift is occurring? They haven't figured out how to do that, so they've decided not to operate them at all.
So this is a work in progress, and I want you to understand that your staff is spending a disproportionate amount of time working with Cambria, just as we did last year, to permit it. So nothing is going unnoticed or unresolved in terms of any kind of permit conditions or anything else. We're putting a lot of time into working with them to make sure the plant is operated properly.
Okay. No further questions from me.
And just to quickly link this, the pond is only at 17% capacity right now.
Roughly 20%.
Pardon me?
Roughly 20%.
Okay, 20%. So you got 80% to go.
They can basically operate
minus the 2 feet and minus with the 1,000 year
correct.
Storm event.
They could essentially operate at this mode for about a year and 3 months.
Yeah. Okay.
Before they would run into an issue.
Mayor Delgado.
Just a very small question, easy to answer probably. The EIR that you're in the process of working, that's just to allow you for the next 20 years, let's say, to operate this system in those years when it's necessary, like 5 to 10 of the next 20 years, or whatever it might be required.
We would like to have the flexibility for the reasons that I mentioned before, as far as groundwater management and everything, to be able to run this not just under emergency conditions. And that's part of the EIR process. The EIR process is to allow us to get a regular coastal development permit that would allow us to have the flexibility to run it when we want. The benefit of that is allowing the wells to rest a little more, and which would have favorable results on both the Santa Rosa and San Simeon groundwater basins.
Okay. The reason I ask is because in your notice of preparation for the scope of the EIR, under the background and history, it says that the need for the use of the project facilities is anticipated to be at least 8 to 10 years of the next 20. But are you saying that the EIR that you envision is hopefully going to conclude that you can use it every year if desired for the next 20?
That's correct.
So does what you're telling me verbally have to be consistent with what the notice of preparation says?
Well, I think as we move forward with the EIR, there's an opportunity for us to clarify exactly what our intentions are for that facility. And again, to be able to run a facility only under stage 3 is not in the best interest of the community or the watershed. So as we communicate that EIR to the public and to the regulatory agencies, they'll have an opportunity to comment on that.
So when the NOP was issued, you had a slightly different vision or view than you do now?
I think out of necessity and as it's evolved, that would be correct.
Okay. And I appreciate the challenges that you have and the dedication that you're applying to all of these issues. And I'm totally on your side in support of you, and I wish you the best of luck.
Oh, thank you.
Could I ask a question? Is the San Simeon outfall, because we've had this discussion, it's going to be covered in the EIR so you can move forward with it. Is that right?
We're evaluating all the options within that document.
So is that a yes?
It's too early to say at this point in time.
But if you don't put it in the EIR, though, then you're sort of closing the door on that option, aren't you?
I think it's going to be mentioned in the EIR.
Okay, so thank you. And at this time, I have three speaker cards. And I would like to start with Ms. Mary Webb.
Good morning, Chairman Wolf and Board. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. You know, we were here last year when this permit was allowed and showed things like the well level data, where the wells have been above average for, you know, all of 2014, 15. Now well level data from the CSD still are above average. So the $13 million facility that they built did not address a sudden unexpected occurrence. It did not qualify for an emergency permit. The district had and has now talked about applying for a permanent permit. The facility is operating, but it has not submitted a completed application for a regular CDP. It has not completed CEQA, and the county, although keenly aware of this, refuses to exercise its mandatory enforcement obligations under the LCP. Because the emergency permit was not subject to Coastal Commission review, and was the district refuses to complete the regular permit application, members of the public are left without a way to ensure that ongoing operation of the project complies with Coastal Act policies and protects coastal resources. We cannot appeal the county's approval to the Coastal Commission for Coastal Act violations until there's a complete permit application. The mandatory application procedures represent a vital safeguard. This is exactly the type of situation that makes these safeguards essential. We ask, and I'm speaking for Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust, we ask that you place conditions on the emergency project now. Cambria well levels remain full. Cambria was never listed by the DWR as a community with acute drinking water shortages. In fact, San Simeon Creek Water Basin was listed as number 512 out of 515 basins in statewide drought priority, the very bottom of the list. We ask that you continue all monitoring and reporting requirements until an EIR is completed, or do not operate this project until the environmental reviews have been completed and permits obtained by all responsible agencies. Don't operate the project in the rain. This is happening now. It makes absolutely no sense, and it's costing money, and the community can't even afford it. As you see, now we're having rate increases again. The lagoon water is not being provided. It was not provided this year, very little. It was not the 100 gallons per minute that was supposed to be mitigation water. I don't think lagoon water is being provided now. Define a stage 3 emergency. For example, the CSD changed its stage 3 requirements last August at the height of the tourist season to allow outdoor irrigation. They did not lift the stage 3, so that allows them to operate the project because they're still in a stage 3. This should not be allowed. Restrict the project to a well-defined emergency stage 3 only. Verify CCSD water well level data. Again, you don't have water well level data in your staff report. We must have transparency by the district. Include well level data, make sure it's accurate, and put them in their staff reports. Demand signed accurate reporting from the district and its contractors. I'm sorry, I have so much more, but we did not get the staff report until November 10th, even though it's dated October 27th. I'd like to still submit formal comments for Green Space if we can.
You had your 3 minutes, so I'll give you a few seconds to wrap up, but
The wrap up is not to send the brine. So the brine pit can operate the way it is. Do not run the mechanical evaporators. Keep the pit in the discharge into the pit. Do not send it to San Simeon. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your input. Mr. Mark Rutchford, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Mark Rochefort. I'm a founder of a grassroots organization in Cambria called Cambrians for Water. Our membership includes residents, permanent residents, vacation home residents, businesses. It's a pretty broadly representative group of our community. I'm here to deliver a shorter and different message than you just heard. Our membership, incidentally, is 800 people strong, which for a town of Cambria size is significant. When I was here a year ago, during the hearing that the permits were issued, I was here for the express purpose of thanking your staff for the Herculean efforts that they had undertaken and performed at that time, essentially doing what had never been done before in the environmental regulatory field, which is to draft, arrive upon regulations, and at the same time enforce them. I'm here to reinforce that message, because since the permits were issued, that your staff has continued to deal with our board in an extraordinarily complementary and collaborative way, in a way that frankly is a model for a good regulatory practices, contrary to what the politics you hear out in the media today. This is the way that the regulatory process is supposed to work. And in fact, this permit is working, and this process is working, and the staff's report today demonstrates that. One last point, just to add a little bit of context to this, not only was the regulatory process very much on a fast track, so was the design process. So we are all working through these issues to develop and to have a plant in Cambria that will be the model for plants throughout California if people so choose to use them. And we thank your staff and this commission from the bottoms of our heart for everything you've done for the state and for our community. Thank you.
Thank you for your input. And the last speaker card that I have is for Mr. Jim Webb. Thank you.
Well, almost good afternoon. My name's Jim Webb, and I have to say I'm just very impressed with the questions you've asked, the amount of attention you're paying to what's happening in Cambria. I'm a 30-year Cambria resident, and I thought I would try to say something that would add to the overall knowledge that you bring to bear in analyzing this project. And in that regard, I thought it would be useful to point out that between Cambria and San Simeon, the towns of Cambria and San Simeon, we have three creeks. The north edge of San Simeon is Pico Creek, the north end of Cambria is San Simeon Creek, and about halfway in the middle of Cambria is Santa Rosa Creek. They all face Cambria State Marine Park, which is a marine protected area established in 2007. The park was subsequently adopted by the Department of Parks and Recreation in 2010 as their first wholly underwater state marine park. The area is also bounded and encompassed by federal regulations that cover the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. So you have three layers of regulatory concerns to address things such as ocean outfalls. And because of that, I was quite surprised to find that staff recommended that CCSD speak with San Simeon about utilizing their sewer plant outfall to dump their brine water. It seems to me that the days of out of sight, out of mind, or well behind us, and that, in fact, the CCSD has the capability and the property that they own to retain the brine and house it there on site. They do not need to ship it up to San Simeon. In fact, there are advantages to bringing San Simeon's tertiary treated water back to the San Simeon well field, because the percolation pond that we're utilizing, the wastewater we're dumping there is less pure than the wastewater San Simeon's currently discharging to the ocean. We would actually benefit from having that water brought back to the San Simeon area, treating it at the advanced wastewater treatment plant, and then storing the brine on the facility. I think that the analysis that staff showed of the project's surface impoundment is not likely sustainable for the project's anticipated flows and capacity. I'd be curious about the mathematics supporting that, because for residents who watch that brine pond and have lived through its development and operation and so on, it has rarely had more than ankle-deep water in it. And as you can see from the pictures, large portions of the bottom are visible today. So I would encourage you not to encourage the CCSD to pursue an ocean outfall. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your input, sir. So this wraps up the speaker card's comment on this particular item. And so I'm going to look at my fellow board members if we have additional questions and thoughts. And I see Mayor Delgado having a question.
Yes, thank you. Regarding public comment, I had some questions. Either to staff or to the CCSD. Mary mentioned that well water data is not available but should be. Can you explain if there's some significance to that?
Well, I believe she was referring to the elevation data for the wells. I believe that's available on the district's website. We don't regulate the well levels. We are primarily concerned with the water quality aspect of it.
Okay. So I think she's referring to a year ago when there was disagreement over the well levels, and that some were saying they're high enough that shows that this is not needed. Others were saying, well, we still need it. And I guess today she's saying she doesn't have access to current well level data. So is that possibly true?
It's possible. I haven't checked their website, but the district also, I mean, the well level data is submitted to us, reports as well, and if she wants a copy of the monitoring reports that we receive, we'd be happy to provide those to her.
I'd like the district to respond to that too, please.
Thank you, Chairman Wolf. Our well data for the San Simeon and Santa Rosa's wells is available on our website. We do our best to get those well levels weekly, and that information is available. In addition to just the well levels, we also have some very, very detailed graphs that's available also.
Okay. And can you stay there if you would, please?
Sure.
Mary's other comment was no lagoon water augmentation or very minimal, and it was kind of clearing a cobweb out from a year ago. That's why these are good for us, you know, to have these annual updates. That there was a beneficial component to this of discharge to aquatic habitat. Is that happening?
Yes, we are and have been since the system has been started discharging into the Santa Rosa Lagoon. It wasn't too long ago, I think at my last board meeting, I took a picture of the lagoon and showed the difference was night and day. So we are discharging in to the lagoon and have been since the system's been up and running.
Okay. And in your opinion, is the stage three definition sort of being used, you know, in your favor? And what about the outdoor use allowed in August of this last year?
Absolutely not. And there's been accusations that stage three has been extended for political reasons, and that's just absolutely not the case. I can't speak for my board, but if we get a significant amount of rain, I'm sure they're going to be reevaluating that. As a matter of fact, it was even suggested to put it on a future agenda item. So we're not using this as a ploy to run the EWS. What Ms. Webb was referring to as far as the outdoor irrigation, we did modify the stage three that was consistent with the governor's drought declaration, and we allowed odd days you can water one day a week, and even address you can water on another day. But we did that for drought reasons. We did that for concerns related to fire. We did not do it for economic reasons. And even with the modification of our stage three to allow people to water outside on a minimal, very, very minimal basis, it's still below what the governor is allowing for the rest of California. So it was a true statement what you said, but it wasn't the entire picture of what really is occurring there.
All right. And what's your opinion on retaining the brine on site, not shipping it to San Simeon, and maybe even taking San Simeon wastewater and treating it at this advanced treatment plant?
I think it's something that we need to consider to have a dialogue with San Simeon with. I think it's something that we need to consider. But right now, the brine pond is functioning the way it was is working. And that's a pretty significant investment for our community. We've addressed all the issues that the Regional Water Quality Control Board has raised. And so my only concern relating to San Simeon is the environmental and regulatory challenges associated with it. You know, we want to be good stewards of the environment. That would result in coming to an alternative brine disposal site that we could expeditiously use if we needed to. We don't want it to be a multi-year process. We'd want to be able to address it in a relatively short period of time. And what we have now is working.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome. All right. I don't see any more questioning and comment from my fellow board members. I certainly would like to thank both the public, our staff, and also the district for, you know, coming today. And you know, we stood on our commitment. We said we would meet again before the end of the year. This is our last meeting for the year. And I think this is the right type of follow through that we do. So when we do permit a project, and I think it's very healthy what we have gone through is to kind of do a little check-in, see what works, what doesn't. Obviously, there's been some tweaks to do on this project, and you know, I want to thank you for your good comprehensive report. So I think that we can close this particular informational item.
And Mr. Chair, before we do, might we bring this back for an additional information item a year from now? It seems like there's a lot of issues that are being worked out, and this is kind of a work in progress.
I think it's definitely reasonable and a good.
Sure. Again, I'll ask staff right now just to go ahead and put it on the calendar for next November's meeting.
Yep.
December. Well, December, whatever day it is. Yeah. Last meeting of 2016.
Yeah, we'll call it the last board meeting of a year. Okay.
Okay.
So thank you for that input, Mr. Young.
You're welcome.
And since this was item 20, do you have anything else to cover, Mr. Harris?
I have nothing.
Okay, so this then will conclude our November 20th Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting. It is 10 past 12. I'd like to thank all of you. And since this is our last meeting of the year, I certainly would like to wish each and every one of you a great upcoming holiday season, plentiful of rain, fall, but with no impact on water quality. How's that? Except beneficial ones. So no sediments, but lots of rainfall. Thank you.